Hi, everyone. Today we have a very special episode for you. I'm joined by Dr. Sadie Witkowski, and we're going to be talking about parasocial relationships in the supernatural fandom. Sadie, welcome to Carrying Wayward.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It's really honestly a pleasure. Like, we've been talking about doing this episode for so long now, so it's really exciting that it's actually coming together.
I know, about time.
Definitely. So for our listeners who may not know you, you're the host and the creator of the In Defense of Fandom podcast. I also know that you have a background in neuroscience and you earn your PhD from Northwestern University studying sleep and memory. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, we're definitely going to be getting a little bit into the kind of psychology neuroscience background that I have with this topic. But I also wanted to add that I now work at the Data Science Institute at the University of Chicago. And so while I've done lots of freelance writing on science journalism and reporting, I've started to get interested in fan research, and I'm trying to convince folks at the DSI, as we call it, to start applying some of those analytical tools and approaches to the field of fan research. So if anyone's interested in that topic.
Oh my God, that is incredibly exciting. Thank you so much for letting us know. So just to kind of give our listeners a little bit of context here, this idea for this episode came to us over the summer of 2023. I had just finished listening to your podcast, In Defense of Fandom, and I think it was in episode 5, Dark Side, where you talk about like the dark side of fandom. And amongst other things, you mentioned parasocial relationships, particularly those that supernatural fans develop with the actors, especially at fan conventions. And like in true Mary fashion, I listened to the episode and a bunch of thoughts bubbled up. And I DM'd you a small novel of all of my thoughts. And looking back at those DMs, like, I think that the thing that really got me going was when you bring up the interview that Misha gave at one point, saying that he doesn't understand why fans put him, Jensen and Jared, or like J2M, as we might know them on Twitter, basically why fans put them on pedestals. And it annoyed me, actually, because it sort of paints fans in a bad light, as if like the parasocial relationships that they develop with the cast haven't been specifically cultivated and encouraged by the cast, by like creation also, and other conventions, and by the show, really.
Yeah, and we definitely got into kind of discussing how these different actors and different folks associate with Supernatural kind of approach this in different ways. And I think parasocial relationships in general get a bad rap. The whole idea of a parasocial relationship is when one person feels much closer and feels a much stronger connection with another person than what you would expect in a typical reciprocal friendship or relationship. And so these kind of, when I was doing some like digging, it's like a lot of this, our popular understanding of them started with like Marilyn Monroe and the beginning of these like gossip magazines about stars, because original, you know, movie stars or musicians, you often didn't even know what they looked like before television. You're like, I don't know, this record that I've heard covered by 6 different people. Right. But it was kind of the start of like classic silver screen Hollywood that led to this. We want to know everything about the stars. What are they eating? What are they wearing? Where do they shop? And it created this glut of information that I think, frankly, in the modern age, and especially with the internet, kind of just makes parasocial relationships happen way outside of fandom as well. So I would argue like sports fans, super parasocial relationships. They can tell everything about their training grounds and their practices. And you're like, sure. Yeah, man, go sports. I don't know. Yeah.
I love sports ball. It's great. Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely. So celebrity culture basically is what you're talking about a lot.
Yes, definitely. And I think it's everywhere. And I think that Supernatural is a particularly interesting example of this because they are like the right level of celebrity. And I do not mean this as an insult or anything like that, but they are very famous, but not very famous to everyone. And they are not like absurdly wealthy famous. Like, I mean, they're absurdly wealthy compared to me, but.
No, but I think I know. I think I understand what you mean. They're no like Britney Spears or like, you know.
Or like One Direction, right?
One Direction.
Like when there was a huge fan around that, I think you could even argue there were some really strong parasocial relationships in that fandom. Yeah. But I think that because they are still like living in normal neighborhoods that are not crazy gated neighborhoods. And you might see them at the airport because they're not flying jets every time or something. Makes it feel like, oh, but I could run into them and I could get a beer with them. It's almost like presidential campaigns that way. Like, right. I would totally get smashing drunk with Jared. I'm not going to lie. It would probably be, we would probably set something on fire and it would be so much fun.
I mean, honestly, I think that you would. Like, I'm just saying, you definitely could. I'm sure he wouldn't be that hard to convince to set something on fire.
Yeah.
See, the fact that I can say that, that I think that he wouldn't be too hard to convince, right? How do I know that? How do I know that? It's because I've heard stories. I've read things in the news. I've heard stories from other fans, right?
Yeah. And they're very, I mean, so especially when the show was still on the air, they were all on Twitter and were like live tweeting with shows and with the episodes airing. And so you could get that kind of direct dopamine hit of like, I tweeted at so-and-so and they responded to me. And then like trying to describe that to people outside the fandom, you're like, yeah. No, this guy, he liked my tweet. And you're like, okay.
Okay. So actually, you said something that I find really interesting. You said the dopamine hit. Can you talk a little bit more about that, especially with your background in neuroscience? I think that that would be really interesting to kind of dig into.
Yeah. So I did. So I'm going to go ahead and say my neuroscience research, sleep and memory, not a whole lot of focus on fan culture and addiction.
Fair enough.
But you know, I have friends in addiction research. And it, to me, honestly, a lot of this seems also kind of in the social psych realm, because if we talk about B.F. Skinner, which most people don't know that name, but this is the guy who did like the positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, positive punishment, negative punishment. This is the guy who was like kind of like Pavlov's dogs next level up, where he, for example, trained pigeons using like they get a treat when they do the right thing. And then the negative, like if they do something wrong, you can either punish them, which can be active, like, you know, like for kids, like a spanking or something, but it can also be just removing of a positive stimulus. So like, you know, for a nerd kid, they can't read a book when they come home because they got bad grades. So that's like a positive punishment or a negative punishment. Mm-hmm. And so there's this kind of classic strategy when we think about how we do really basic training that was like usually used animals as models, but applies to humans as well.
Right.
Then once you understand that there's like these different ways of reward and punishment, the next step is, do you reward the behavior every time or do you reward it sometimes? And this is what basic addiction, like why slots machines work so well. And it's called intermittent reinforcement schedule. So you, if you want a behavior to keep happening, you give them a really good reward, but you don't give it every time. So the, you know, either the kid you're trying to train or the animal or your spouse, they keep doing that behavior because they're like, sometimes I get this really good reward. So I'm going to keep doing it to get that dopamine hit. And this is where I say that I think Misha Collins is doing this. With his text group chat that he set up, where you can register so that he has your phone number and you might get a birthday wish on your birthday. You might get a New Year's celebration message. And sometimes you can text that number and sometimes he sees it and he will text back. And that is intermittent reward. And that is building an addictive behavior, like neuroscience 101.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm glad that you're bringing up Misha's texting service, because that was like one of the biggest things that I brought up in our DM conversation, right? Because like when I was listening to your episode, I was like, yes, 100% to all of this. Like, I think that we're all responsible for our behaviors, right? And like good and bad. And to a certain degree, maybe when we're not necessarily aware of them, like it's hard to be completely in control of them. But once you know, you know. So personal responsibility is very important. But I think that one aspect that when people are talking about the crazy fans, quote unquote, I think that one thing that really gets overlooked is how these relationships are encouraged by, and in this case, we're talking about J2M, right? And Misha with his texting service, but this is like wider as well, right? Like this is not specific to Misha and this is not specific to Supernatural, but it is encouraged by the cast, especially in Supernatural through, and I use that as an example, like Misha having a texting service, right? Where he's like, I don't understand why I'm being put on this pedestal. And yet he uses that pedestal and he's been very open about wanting to use his fame in order to do quote unquote, like good political good.
He does a lot of like impactful political work.
Exactly. There you go. He has also a lot of like charity work that's going on and just like good community work. And it strikes me as a little bit, I'm going to say hypocritical, but yeah, because it's like, well, I don't understand why people are doing that, but this is really what I wanted from the get-go.
Yeah. It's like unself-aware in some specific way almost, right. of I've built this fan base who not only like my character in the show, but like me for the specific seemingly personal interactions. And I will say, mm-hmm. like, I do think that we should talk about conventions in particular in a second, but, yeah. Like getting those text messages and then you respond, yeah. and then he responds back to, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And this is such an anime thing, but senpai sees me, you know, and, and it builds that interpersonal relationship, yeah. that then if you got a message, it's like, hey guys, don't forget to vote. You are more likely to want to do it because you already have these like positive associations with this person. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh yeah, I was already planning to, but that extra nudge reminded me to do early voting or something so mm-hmm. that I didn't miss the deadline.
Mm-hmm. Well, people are going to follow calls to action when they feel that they're being listened to, right? When they feel like they're being taken care of, right? That's basic. That's also like really basic, like social media strategies, right? Like yeah. you interact with people on social media. And then when you ask them to go and listen to your podcast, for example, then they do it, or they're more likely to do it because they like you. Like that's just basic human interaction. And if we're going to talk about the conventions, like there's a lot of money that goes into conventions. And when I first sent you that DM, I had, just for complete transparency, I had never been to a convention, but I did buy my first ticket. So in May, I'm going to be participating in
one of us.
Yeah, one exactly. of us. In making money for J2M in that way. But there's a lot of money in conventions. And so like, there's obviously an interest for the cast to make sure that there is an apparent relationship with the audience in order to ensure attendance at these conventions. And so again, like to kind of turn around and say like, oh, the fans are just crazy. Well, I find that to be a little bit reductive. And I'm not saying that anybody said on your podcast that people were crazy, but this is kind of like a wider comments that we see, right? Like
my husband that says I'm crazy. It's fine. That's established. There's no redeeming me. I'm too far down the rabbit hole.
Well, so right. So, you know, you and your husband aside, like I think but I think for me what kind of gets to me is the wider discourse about like the popular discourse about fans. Because I think that when you go into fan studies, like that discourse is not necessarily there. So within the academic realm, it's not present, but like definitely within the popular realm, it really is.
And I would argue it actually used to be in the academic realm, because if you like, so I did a little bit of digging and like that, not my field. So I didn't do like a full lit review, but I had a friend who studied video games in grad school. It was interested in cognitive and emotional, socio-emotional behavior and stuff like that in competitive video games. And her and I were talking, she's like, yeah, do you remember when video games first became popular? And like everyone was convinced it was bad for your brain. It was going to make everyone a mm-hmm. serial killer because they were playing all these, you know, shoot 'em up games that, you know, and she's like, so the early research was super negative. And the later research was like a total wave of like, no, they're actually good for you. They're good for memory and they're good for pro-social skills. And then now that the field's been around for a while, everybody's kind of like, I mean, it depends on the game. It depends on yeah. how deeply you engage. And I think it's true with fan studies too. Like mm-hmm. originally it was like, oh, we should put this in the DSM, which is the diagnostic manual that clinical psychologists use to diagnose different mental disorders. You know, it's a disease. And then there was this big push against it. Like, no, this is just normal ways that humans connect. And now we're like in between of like, I don't know.
I mean, it depends
on the individual.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, for sure. Like there are examples that come to mind where I'm like, for sure, this is not healthy. But I also think that within the wider, like most fans that I interact with, you know, are very well aware of these interactions. Let's put it that way.
It's especially funny when people are self-aware and they come back and they're like super excited that like, so-and-so liked my tweet about the Winchesters. They're like, I know that this is crazy behavior. I'm still going to engage in it. And I need you to just go with me for 5 minutes. Yeah, exactly. And those are my favorite kind of people. Cause I'm like, yeah, like just just enjoy that dopamine hit for a little bit.
Yeah, it's there fine. You go. Yeah, exactly. But so then my question here is like, who does it serve to put like the full quote unquote blame on the fans and not at all on the cast or not at all on like the wider machine of celebrity culture?
Yeah, because I would argue it's a wider machine. I mean, like, I have friends who are massive Beatles nerds and like, look at John Lennon. Like, you know, everyone's like, oh, crazy fans. It's like, and I don't think John Lennon was like causing that. No. I'm gonna take that a step back.
Yeah.
But I think it is celebrity culture writ large. And I think, you can make some big sociological arguments about the atomization of the American, of the worker, which is also kind of the atomization of our experiences. We don't go to Elk Club meetings. We don't have Freemason lodges where people are doing these kind of nonprofit organizations together anymore. We don't have a lot of what are called third spaces, which is not your home, not where you work or buy stuff, but a space where you commune with other people that doesn't have a monetary interaction, you know, churches, libraries, parks. People spend less and less time in that. And so are we surprised that people are looking for connection?
Mm-hmm.
And then also if there's money to be made off of it, are we surprised when companies try to profit off of that or individuals try to profit off of that?
Mm-hmm.
That's like a 10,000 foot view.
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely. Like, and of course, like as we're talking about this, like another example that comes to mind is Taylor Swift, who very openly lets people into the parts of her life that she chooses to share. I'll put it that way. Very, very openly. And when people feel like they know so much about her because they've been let into her life through her songs, it's like, oh, but how do you kind of like that realization, I guess, that you don't actually, you only know what she lets you know.
Right. Which to be fair is true of most relationships. Right. You know, we all to some degree put on a face for the different kinds of professional or private relationships we have. I might be different with my Taekwondo buddies from college who are like, you know, the guys I was always super active with versus college friends who were plan two honors and they were all, you know, they went to talk about literature. You know, you're always kind of doing a version of yourself, but it's so much more pronounced when it's a single individual to a crowd in the case of these kinds of parasocial, you know, and even if you feel like, oh, I'm one of the few people who knows this thing about Taylor, it's like, okay, but one of few in this case means like only a million.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it also changes because like, I mean, me speaking to a crowd is different from like a celebrity with a publicist and a manager speaking to a crowd as well, right? Because there is a strategy behind that. Whereas me speaking to a crowd there, I mean, sure, there's a strategy, but it's been thought of by myself. Like I want to share this with people. Whereas like for a celebrity, it's part of a different kind of career move, let's put it that way, than it would be for me, right? Like speaking either through this mic or at a scientific conference. Like it's a whole different ball game.
It is. And like, it's not always, and I don't like, I'm very anti-capitalist. I don't care if we play that bit. But I don't want to say that it's always like the celebrity, like they're not playing this as a cruel game of like, this is how I make more money is if I convince you to think you're my friend, you'll take more photos with me at the con and I will make more money. Like, I don't think it's purely cynical. I think that to some degree, it's probably really uncomfortable being on that pedestal and having a lot of people know a lot more about you than you know about them. And to some degree, the effort of you trying to share might be in hopes that you get some sharing back at an appropriate level that then you feel like you're making an interpersonal connection. Because like, okay, taking Misha, for example, again,
right.
At the creation conventions, you can do meet and greets with the different celebrities. Misha's unique. And then instead of doing a 30-minute meet and greet, you can bid more money than you ever should. I've done it. It's fine. I can say that. For a 45-minute adventure meet and greet, which is not sitting in a hotel ballroom, but, you know, doing some kind of activity, going somewhere else. It's a smaller group. And I don't, like, you could argue like, oh, double the money. You do the regular meet and greet and this other one. But also it strikes me as a purposeful choice to try to have a smaller group that you can truly interact with because you don't want to feel like you're just talking to the masses. So I don't want to like totally say that it's a cynical move.
No, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that people who do this work this kind of work, they have to like it. There has to be something that they get out of it, right? Like, in a way that I don't think I would ever be comfortable with, right? But there's got to be a lot of people in this world for, you know, for this world to go around, and that's totally fine. So I do agree with you that I think that there is something that they get out of this. Otherwise, I guess they wouldn't be doing it anymore, right?
Yeah, I would assume not. Or if they do it, they would have more limited experience. So if we're just talking about cons, they would do more limited experiences. Maybe you wouldn't mm-hmm. do a meet and greet. Maybe you would limit the number of autographs you do. Mm-hmm. Maybe you would only do panels. Like, granted that then you're limiting your income, but maybe you just wouldn't do cons at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are some personal individual differences for sure.
For sure. So, okay. So you talked a little bit about like dopamine hits, and we also talked a little bit about like the wider celebrity culture, but I'm sort of thinking also about how are these relationships like developed, right?
Yeah. Ooh, starting from where, right? Like if we're going back into like more psych things, I was literally reading some like addiction mm-hmm. articles. Mostly I was skimming and reading abstracts and things, but like, you know, part of this is mere exposure effect, which is this psychological effect of if you've been exposed to a piece of information or a thing more than once, you just tend to like it more. So if you read a wrong fact once and then you read it again, you like it more and believe it's true. Even if you read it the first time, found out it was wrong, but then mm-hmm. see it again, because that familiarity feeling mm-hmm. is closely associated with liking. And mm-hmm. so part of it is that like, if I'm just out there more, you'll like me more. Although I think that can backfire in some of these cases, because like I would say, for example, you don't want to become overexposed is something you'll hear like PR agents talk about, right? Where mm-hmm. you don't want to be too out there, because then maybe you become divisive or you become exhausting or whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is like something that I think that to talk about another member of J2M, I think Jensen is really thoughtful about.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he thinks about his exposure, but mm-hmm. for example, like I've been to the Family Business Brewery many, many times, and everyone calls it Jensen's Brewery. It's Gino's Brewery, who also Daniil and Jensen and their families would have been on together. But if you go there, it's not like there's supernatural paraphernalia everywhere. I mean, there is, because I ran a contest and I made fans submit their art, mm-hmm. but the way it's designed is not like a supernatural themed bar. And I think that was on purpose, and trying to like give some space so that he knew this was going to be seen as Jensen's Brewery. And he was like, no, this is Gino's thing. And I don't want it to become just another fan, stomping ground, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. I agree with you. And Jensen is also really good at like not being seen.
Yes.
I find, right? Like his I think it's described on Twitter as like his old man attitude towards social media is actually something that works in his favor, I believe, anyway.
I think he's playing a character. I'm like, you're not as bad as you say you are. This is nonsense, but it makes Absolutely. You seem likable and relatable.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah. You look at like when he was tweeting about the Winchesters when it was still on the air, and he was terrible about using the hashtag. And then the show was on the chopping block, and all of a sudden he understood how hashtag save the Winchesters works. And I was like, either your wife made you sit down and do this, or your press agent, or you knew what you were doing. And all of these seem equally likely in my head.
Absolutely. I would not be able to pick one out, frankly. That's for sure. Okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
And another psych thing I did want to mention that I also thought about a lot when I was thinking about this is, and these are all social psych things, and all my grad school friends are gonna make fun of me because this is so not my area, but there's another one called the endowment effect. And kind of the classic study I've seen for this one is if you are given a coffee mug and it's just a plain white coffee mug, you don't really care about it. You ask someone to rate, like, if you got this mug, how much would you pay for it? And you're like, oh, I don't know, $2. And then they're like, all right, we're going to take this away. How much will you, in fake money, how much would you give us to keep it? And they're like, $3, because this is now my mug, because I have decided I have ownership. And that's this endowment effect. Like, when you have a sense of ownership, you value things higher. So even if like you have a ratty pair of tennis shoes and you could get a new pair of tennis shoes, if you feel ownership of that ratty pair and you have memories, you're going to value them way more than the brand new pair. And I think celebrity experiences kind of fall on this in a funny way. Ooh. Of like, I got this thing signed by so-and-so. And you're like, I mean, it's a, you know, it's a cheap t-shirt or it's a whatever. You're like, or a photo. I got a photo op signed by a celebrity. If you ask them to value it, and then you took it to a pawn shop and got a pawn shop to value it, they will not be the same, because we have a feeling of this ownership, and you feel ownership over fandoms.
Yeah. I think that we also feel ownership over the fandom, the objects, but also like the characters, the stories. Ooh, yes. Oh no, I can feel thoughts bubbling again. Yeah. Yeah, look at the way Jensen tweeted "Save the Winchesters" and immediately fans left the action. That's so funny. Yes, it's there. Yes, there you go. He does cultivate these relationships as well.
I think he just cultivates by an absence. He's doing the opposite of Misha. Misha's like, here's some positive reinforcement randomly. And Jensen's like, you haven't seen me online for a long time? Well, here's a photo. And you're like,
exactly.
Everyone freaks out.
Photo dump of all of the pictures that I took this fall. Oh, goodness. Yeah, he does that.
I always wonder.
Symbiotic. Then, yeah.
Okay. Like with these symbiotic relationships, like I do think that they are purposely trying to create a relationship. And something I wanted to mention about conventions is that I think from an outsider's point of view, outside of the fandom, right. You're like, oh, you're going to this thing. You're going to spend a stupid amount of money for a pretty man to smile at you and pretend he knows you when he doesn't. And I'm like, okay, fair. But also, I actually think that some of these people are recognizable. Maybe names are not known. There's certain, like, you're not friends with them, but sometimes people do recognize. And I think that, like, there have been examples of fans being like, oh yeah, like Misha remembers the last piece of art I brought him. Mm-hmm. Or Jared said something super nice to my son the last time I went. And when I went this time without my son, he mentioned, like, you know, asked how my son was. Like, I don't think that they have the memory of a goldfish. I think they do remember and recognize some people. Mm-hmm. It becomes parasocial when you're like, okay, so how much money at how many cons do I have to spend for them to have a smile of recognition and not the blank smile of I am here because you are excited about this?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, whether it is, I think at the end of the day, for me anyway, like the way that I view this is whether this is, if we look at it in the most cynical way, which is like, I'm just here to make money, which I agree with you. I don't think it's just that. But I do think that it is a big part. Like, I'm sorry. I really do think it is a big part. Like, I mean, nobody would do this if they didn't like it or if it didn't make them money, right? So there has to be both on both sides. And again, like, because Misha lets us in on a lot of his thought process, one thing that we know is that, like, it costs him money to set up this text service, right? But he knew that he would be able to offset that cost through other means. And he's been very open about that. He talks about it openly. And so it is a business decision. And I think anyway, for their brand, because that's who they are as an actor, your brand is incredibly important. But what I'm trying to say is that these relationships, even though they are parasocial, they're also symbiotic. Like, you can't be parasocial with somebody who doesn't want, or like who has never put anything out there, you know? And I think that putting aside like cases like stalking, for example, like it's in celebrity culture, in order to, again, establish your brand, there has to be a certain amount of yourself or your character that's out there for people to then be, quote unquote, on the hook, to use like addiction language, and get those little shots of dopamine when you answer their texts, right? So it is a symbiotic relationship that I don't think should be only blamed on fans.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's like, oh, we built this casino and it's really addictive. And for some reason, people keep losing all their money. And it's like, man, you built a system that's addictive. Like, what did you think?
Exactly.
The power doesn't work the way that you want it to.
I wish it did, though. But yes, exactly. I certainly wish that it did.
Look, New Year's resolutions would not be a thing if willpower was just like, and then I decided I would not eat sweets. Like, that's not how that works.
Exactly. There you go. We wouldn't see like a huge spike in gym memberships in January, right? Like, it's a thing. It's a thing. And we do, yeah, we But I like that we wish better for ourselves, though. I do enjoy that. I like that part.
No, we're trying to change for the better. And it is so interesting to me because sometimes I think about this, especially if I'm thinking about like trying to collect interviews or hearing fans talk about these really short interactions with celebrities that they really enjoy, especially Supernatural. You know, someone will come back from an autograph session and be like, oh my God, this thing happened. And it's like a three-line exchange and they're so excited. And I've done this too. Mm-hmm. And like you then trying to explain it to someone outside the fandom, they're like, okay. Mm. And it's like, I guess maybe parasocial relationships should just be seen in how much brain space is being allotted by each person in the relationship of the mm-hmm. parasocial relationship, because fans are allotting a lot more brain space to that interaction, I promise, than whoever was signing your thing.
Definitely. Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure. I'm scared of my reaction when I go to the convention. we'll talk about that when it happens. Maybe that could be. So actually, speaking of that, do you have any experiences with parasocial relationships?
Oh, 100%. My problem. Yeah, no, I like even as a when I remember when like the first Iron Man movie came out and I was really obsessed with like Robert Downey Jr. and that movie, I would have, and I'm known to do these, I have these stress dreams where if I've been socially like overstimulated, like I've been at a party for too long, I dream that the party is still happening in my room and I will sit up and start sleep talking and like wake up my husband, wake up my dog, because I'm just trying to have a conversation. And I've had so many stress dreams having conversations with Robert Downey Jr., sometimes as Iron Man, sometimes as the actor. I don't know that I could ever have a conversation with that man. I would have a much better chance with somebody else. But yeah, I've definitely, and that was the most obvious example I can give for like an actor. And then I fell into Supernatural and I was like, oh, the problem is Jared and Jensen are from Texas and I'm from Texas. So now I'm like, homies, Texas y'all. And I have this assumption that they do not have. And then I found out Rob Benedict did undergrad at Northwestern, where I did my PhD. And I was like, and he's from my mom's hometown of Columbia. And I was like, Midwest homie. And then I found out Misha did undergrad at UChicago, where I work. And I'm like, Midwestern homie. And so sometimes when I go up to talk to them, I act way more personable than I should, because I'm just like, we are friends now. You didn't know this, but I've decided.
Let me inform you of our friendship status right now. Exactly. I love that. I really love that.
I think sometimes they're like, whoa. I'm like, oh, so in Austin, when you go down 6th Street, and they're like, I don't know who you are.
Like, hold on, wait a second. I need more context for this.
Back way up. And like, you do the thing where you're like, you pull out the archive where you're like, well, when you said in this episode of this podcast from 10 years ago, and then they get the big eyes and you're like, oh no, now I'm the crazy one.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh no, I've revealed too much of myself.
Well, so have you had any parasocial relationships?
I mean, I feel like, yes, definitely with this particular fandom, certainly. I feel like I know way more about these three men than I absolutely should. particularly Misha, because he was the one that I was like, I guess, the most parasocial with, again, because of the text. It's we're recording this way before the date that it's coming up, and my birthday is coming up, and you just reminded me that he does send people texts on their birthday. And so I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna get a text from Misha on my birthday. It's gonna be exciting. So definitely in that sense, like I definitely fall in that category. In a much smaller way, doing the podcast that I do for having been doing Carrying Wayward for 3 years and having put a lot more of myself out there than I initially set out to, I do feel like sometimes people will approach us or approach me knowing a lot more about me than I know about them. And that's always a little unnerving at first. And then I realize, okay, yes, that's how they, like, I have to, like you said, I have to kind of contextualize that and be like, oh yes, it's, they listen to the podcast, so they know this about me. It's true. So that's a thing that happens, definitely.
And I think it's especially weird in podcasting, because you get regular listeners, but then you also have people who will binge. And so to them, they heard something from your archive last night. To you, you're like, I said that 5 years ago. I don't, my opinions might've changed. I might've changed. I just don't remember. Like, and so now imagine that, but it's your entire career.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. There you go. So like, hey, remember that thing that you said on this particular episode? Like, oh my God, I don't even remember recording this episode. I'm so sorry. You're going to have to give me a lot more information than that. So at a, like I said, at a much smaller scale sometimes, and we will get emails sometimes like, hey, you guys said this at this particular minute in this episode. And it's like, okay, hold on. Like I like explain this to me and then we can talk about it a little bit more. So it's, that's a strange thing that happens to us a little bit once in a while.
I feel like you are both, so I feel like podcasting and radio is both protected and particularly at risk for this. Yeah. Protected because it's audio. So fundamentally, mm-hmm. you don't see the person. So unless you're really good at recognizing voices, the chances of someone spotting you at a bar or spotting you right. at the airport, very mm-hmm. low. Mm-hmm. However, because it is this like voice in your ears, usually someone who's being really conversational, that do end up revealing things about themselves, especially on longer running shows, it's extremely personal and personable. Yeah. It's that, you know, you close your eyes mm-hmm. and it sounds like your friends all hanging out in your living room, you know, shooting yeah. the breeze. And so mm-hmm. I feel like you feel much more approachable because you've just been chatting with friends. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. Drew got recognized actually at a convention. That was really cool. He was really excited about that. I was so excited about that for him. I was like, what?
We've made it.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh my God.
I was joking with my friends. I was like, apparently I'm the big name fan because someone came up and was like, your podcast, I love it. And I was like, oh, I forgot I have more than 5 listeners.
Yes, exactly. So, right. That moment where people are like, oh, you are this person. And it's like, wait a second. And yeah. Yeah, definitely. I love that. But I have never had a stress dream about Robert Downey Jr. yet. I feel like.
I don't recommend them. They're very stressful. It's so embarrassing. It's such a random thing. And there's like, this is a very small aside. You may cut if you want, but there's like an 80% chance that I accidentally met him once because I was on a ski lift in Park City, Utah. And we were, and it was like one of those big lifts that takes you to the top of the mountain. And it was me mm-hmm. and my dad. And then these 2 other guys get on the lift with us. Cause it's a big lift and it's like a long ride up and they all have like really nice gear and they've got big goggles on and hats and everything. And the guy is like shooting the breeze with his friend and then starts making fun of my rental skis, but like purposely trying to like goad me into the conversation jokingly. And we like chatted for a while. And the whole time we were talking, it was like, this guy has the like voice cadence and like verbal tics of Robert Downey Jr. But I kept looking at him as like, you got goggles and a scarf right. and a hat on. I can't tell. We get off the ski lift. I turn to my dad. I'm like, did that sound like Robert Downey Jr. to you? And my dad's like, I don't know who that is. I was like, did that sound like Iron Man / Sherlock to you? And my dad's right. like, oh, it did. Oh. And I looked it up later and he's been known to ski there because that's like where a film festival happens. I was like, I'll never know. But I maybe that's why I have the stress dreams. I think maybe we solved it. Is.
It. I think, yeah, there you go. That must have been the first instance of it.
that's what caused it. So started it I all in that. Like high school.
You could have a conversation with him. Maybe you have.
And he made fun of my skis. Very rude.
Very rude of him. Honestly, you should definitely remind him of that next time you talk to him.
Someday I'm going to meet him and be like, you don't know this, but I have a story to tell yes, and I need confirmation.
Exactly. One thing, actually, the one time, because so I used to work. Okay. This is something that we don't talk about often, but I used to work in an Apple store and in the specific one that I worked at, like we didn't have all that many Apple stores like at the time. And so like there were only like 2 big ones like in the whole area. And so like there were a lot of people who would come to our Apple store when the one downtown was like too busy, right? So anyway, and one day like I see all of the guys, like they're like just chatting, like there's something going on. And I just assume there's a hot girl out in the front of the store. And I'm like, whatever. So I walk in and I see this person and I start helping them and he asks me questions and whatever. And I'm like, oh, that's great. No problem. So I help this person. And then I come back into back of house and literally all of the guys like immediately like swarm me and they're like, oh my God, how is he? Blah, 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 blah. Like asking me about this particular customer. And it turns out that it was like this really well-known hockey player that I had no idea. And I'm like, okay, but like, he's just a normal person, you know? So in this instance, I was like the person outside of the fandom that had like no idea that she was talking to somebody with that high ownership value, I guess.
My mom, I have to tell one of the story. My mom did a similar thing. I was raised in rural Texas and my mom was taking guitar lessons and she'd go to these guitar picking circles where it would just be a group of people get together, you know, play songs and stuff. And one time she was at one of these and this guy next to her was really, you know, quite impressive. And she looks over, she's like, hey man, you're pretty good at that. And he goes, yeah, thanks. And then she like left the circle and this other person came up and she's like, that's Ray Wiley Hubbard. Like, that's like a real musician who just sometimes comes and plays with us. And I was like, oh, I love his, oh.
That's amazing. Again,
if you don't know what someone looks like.
Right, exactly, for sure. Oh my God, that's too funny.
And I did a similar thing last year in 2023 in Nashville. I was at the Analog for the Radio Company concert. And this beautiful woman comes up, we're like on the balcony, second floor, and starts talking to some of the friends I'm with. And I'm like, who is this beautiful woman? And why is she talking to our friends? And then one of them leans over and they're like, don't you recognize Brie? And I was like, oh no.
Yeah. Oh my God. I don't think I would ever be able to talk to Brie. Like, that is definitely somebody that I would be starstruck like with immediately.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Big hard eyes.
Big hard eyes. But also now I've decided I'm like, and she will also be my friend.
You should definitely inform her of that.
I will. I'll let her know the next time I see her. You didn't know this, but I've decided we're friends.
Yeah, there you go. Is there anything else that like you're thinking about when you're thinking about parasocial relationships and particularly within Supernatural?
Yeah, I think the last thing that I like to point out is like, I don't think it's a line of like, this is parasocial, this is just a normal social relationship. Right. I think some of these relationships do become semi-reciprocal. They, you know, like I said, I think they do start to recognize some fans. I think that, you know, these are other humans who want to connect with humans.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't think that there's a clean line to draw there, just like there's not a clean line to draw of like parasocial is good or bad. It's like, it depends on the instance and yeah, man, it's all messy. That's my last thought. It's all muddy.
No, I'm super glad that you're bringing this up because again, like I feel like a lot of the time when we talk about parasocial relationships, we talk about that as a very negative thing, right? As something like to kind of like as a gotcha, you know, like, oh, just because you have a parasocial relationship with this person. And it's like, well, yeah. And that parasocial relationship is a symbiotic one, like we said, right? It's something that is encouraged by the person who is the object of the parasocial relationship and by the fans who enjoy this kind of like dopamine hit of the text response, right? Because I think that that's just the best.
It's just such example. An obvious example.
It really is. One. Like, thank you, Misha Collins, for giving us so many good talking points today. If you ever listen to this. Definitely.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really interesting space to explore. And I think that as we see more kind of fan research and social psych research and sociology research, it's going to be a better explored space because I think it's even though it's been around since Marilyn Monroe, like that's still a really new field. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be interesting to, I don't know, I'll start reading more peer reviewed publications.
Yeah, there are very few and far between, I find, like these particular ones, but they're exciting whenever they do come out. It's like, ah, yes.
Vindication.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, ah, I've been telling you guys. Sadie, thank you so much for spending time with me today and for having this amazing conversation. Can you please remind us where we can find you and your podcast on social media?
Yes, I am on Twitter/X at Sadie Witt because my last name is absurd to try to spell out. And I'm also on Instagram at Sadie Witt. And yeah, keep your eyes out. Season 2 will either have just started or will be just about to start for In Defense of Fandom. And it's going to be all about endings. And when a TV series ends, what does that do to the fandom? And obviously we're focusing on Supernatural, but I think there's going to be some fun new threads to tie into this conversation.
Oh, for sure. Oh my goodness. That's a big can of worms for so many different fandoms. Thank you for exploring that. I'm very excited to listen to the season 2. And you can find us on social media at Carrying Wayward. You can become a patron or a supporter by heading to carryingwayward.com. And as always, carry on our wayward friends.